This is
the Sports Show
on URN.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Show on URN 1350.
Check it out.
This is URN.
My name is Louis Cutgrove. I'll be taking over the show tonight from regular host Paul Millington this week, as he has his finals tomorrow. We wish you the best of luck, Paul. On tonight's show, we're rounding up the action from the last days of the footballing season across Europe. So, if you've got an opinion, a good statistic, or simply want to vent your frustration at your team's performance over the past 9 months, or on the last day of the season, Spurs, text in via web text on urn1350.net, or alternatively, you can tweet us at urn1350. Right, so joining me on today's show is our resident Leeds fan and Spanish speaker, Chris Brown, newcomer to the Tuesday show, Barney Kiddle, and David Okosim's last-minute replacement, Simon Shah. How are you doing, guys?
Yeah, not too bad.
What a replacement, David Okosim.
Yeah, exactly. Super incredible. Sub, Simon Shah. Oh, four S's in a row. revising hard?
Hardly revising, really.
Well, I suppose that's why you're on the show. So, the format of tonight's special show is thus. So, each of us will take it in turn to present a European League for discussion. So, highlights, statistics, maybe a prediction for next season's winners, and then we'll have a lively debate on which was the most exciting league to watch this season. So let's start with the league closest to home, the Premiership, and here's a clip to introduce it.
Given away to Kagawa. Now Rooney. And Percy making a trademark run again. And what a ball to pick him out!
Well, that was Van Persie's Premiership winning goal against Aston Villa there. Barney, you're up for the Premiership. Enlighten us and put forward your case.
Well, first off, you have to say, it was always going to be hard to come anywhere near, the events of last season, especially last day of the season when you had the title being played for, which went down to the last kick of the game. We all know the Aguero goal. You also had the race for the Champions League still last season, and you also had the race for relegation. So, unfortunately, we already had the last day of the season race for top four, but that doesn't mean the whole of the season wasn't as interesting. I think the thing that really strikes about the Premier League this season is all the retirements. And, even today we've heard Tony Pulis is leaving. That's another one. He's been...
Was that a retirement or was that a leaving by mutual assistance? He's going to come back to management, though, surely.
Yeah, but he's also... I'm not entirely sure if he can get back in the Premier League, though. I think he's... it's hard. You can't see another Premier League team really hiring him. There's just it's so competitive at the moment.
Surely his reputation, though, his 7 years he's kept Stoke in the Premier League, that goes in great favour for him. Okay,
yeah,
they may not play the best football.
You look at the available jobs at the moment. Everton, I don't think they'd go for Pulis. I think they're more likely to go for Martinez, possibly, maybe Laudrup. Again, you could argue that a team coming up, as you've seen in the past, a lot of teams who come up lose faith in their manager, sack them. Then maybe they'll hire Pulis. But I just feel Pulis has a reputation similar to Sam Allardyce. Not very attractive football, but he will keep you in the Premier League. But then a lot of fans, they'd love the stability, but then they also would love the attractiveness of the...
Yeah, fair enough. But Tony Pulis isn't exactly an advertisement for the excitement of the Premier League.
No.
What's been the attractive features this season?
The attractive features, well, obviously Sir Alex Ferguson leaving, that stands out. It's an end of an era.
You're right, that is an attractive feature.
yes, Leeds fan there.
First season in charge for Brendan Rodgers and he knocks Alex Ferguson off his perch.
Yeah, it's also, I think the relegation battle, although it didn't have the climactic ending, we all thought it would, Wigan already down for the end of the season. The fact you had, from 18th to 11th, teams like only 2 points apart. For a long time, you didn't know who was going to go down. I mean, most people were convinced Villa would go down without a hope, and they
think Luke Baker, our own very own sports show, Luke Baker, was convinced Villa were going to go down
right
since
up to the
Christmas.
Final game. He was still dead certain that they were going to go down.
It just shows that the Premier League is getting even more competitive. I feel like each season that goes by, the promoted teams are improving. I mean, obviously, Reading had a pretty disastrous season, but Southampton and West Ham were very impressed this season. I mean, West Ham finishing in the top half, they did have the players already, but I still thought it was very impressive them finishing the top half. Southampton, very impressed by after Adkins leaving, I was convinced they were going to go down, but Pochettino just come out of nowhere and he's produced a brilliant team. So I think the relegation battle made it very interesting. Race for fourth, obviously, he had four teams going for it. Everton kind of went off the boil towards the end, but it went down to the last game of the season, Arsenal, Spurs. It was, as a Newcastle fan, I was very disappointed with our performance in the second half. I mean, if we'd played better, threatened Arsenal more, it could have been a brilliant end to the season, but it was still very intriguing the last few minutes when Bale's goal went in. You kind of felt something could happen, but it didn't. The title challenge obviously wasn't as interesting as this season, but it's just because Man United were just so efficient, so good. Van Persie, real difference. And adding to that, Man City just underperformed, which obviously lost Mancini his job. And going back to like people retiring, people losing their jobs, that is another issue of the Premier League. You've got Brian McDermott, wrongfully sacked, I believe. Nigel Adkins, again, wrongfully sacked, who took Brian McDermott's job. It's quite interesting.
Roberto Di Matteo, just putting out there.
Another one. There's just Mark Hughes. I mean, well, you could
argue. Mark Hughes wasn't wrongfully sacked. No one can argue that convincingly.
Okay, he wasn't wrongfully sacked. I'll give you that.
We could talk about QPR all day, but I just want to put in the QPR were one of the entertaining sides of the Premier League. Not because they played great football or anything. Just following Tony Fernandes on Twitter during the games and him ranting.
Brilliant.
And just how their dressing room fell apart live on TV. Like, Bisinga is possibly like going, well, we're going to pay you so much money, but I'm not going to play because I want to play right back. I don't want to play right back or something. He decided he just wasn't going to turn up. So
I don't know how he's played right back or right wing back
all his career,
and then he just suddenly decides not to turn up. I mean,
I don't know.
So it's an odd one.
QPR were basically a mess this season, and Harry Redknapp couldn't do anything to save them when he came in. There was a small chance they could have survived if he'd managed to get the team playing, but they didn't play.
Bisinga epitomises the player who's in it for the money. You can just tell he just hadn't. I mean, I don't know if you saw the match when they got relegated, when they played Reading, both got relegated. I just remember watching Bisinga just laughing going down the tunnel, which, as a QPR fan, you must have been absolutely livid. He was just laughing, oh, well, I'll be going off back to Portugal probably next year.
Ariel Tabat didn't turn up at all, at all. All season.
Tarabs was, last season and the season before that, people were talking
like
about
he's going to go to a Champions League winning side, and he hasn't performed. He was good in the Championship. And you can be made to look good in the Championship. He came here and he just didn't put any effort in. There was no work effort. He thought he was a class above everyone and he got shown up.
Individually, QPR do have good players.
They have that one from Townsend that was at Leeds.
Andros Townsend,
has been on loan to them from Hull.
He's from Spurs, actually, I think.
Spurs, sorry. I don't know why I said Hull.
That's fine.
I genuinely have no idea why Hull came out.
Hull on the mind, hey, Chris.
Yeah, but he's been really good for them individually, and they have had some very good individual efforts. But for QPR, more often than not, there's been one player that's turned up and thought, I really want to play. And then the rest of them have just been like, well,
actually,
then you're on your own, mate.
It could have been a lot more embarrassing for QPR, apart from Julio Cesar, who, for my mind, was their player of the season. He pulled off outstanding saves to actually keep them in games. They had games where they drew 0-0. Just because Julio Cesar made 10 outstanding saves that game.
there was
a game, I can't remember what it called, I think you're recording it, where he just outrageous, and you just remember how good he was.
I was going to say, when he signed for QPR, he said, yes, I've come to QPR to win the league. And he thinks, right, okay, you're saying, I know, it's all very good to like...
Probably he didn't specify which
title.
League.
Yeah, exactly. But coming back to the relegation battle in the last three games running up to the end, I went on the BBC Sport league predictor, and
I love
you
that.
Could do it
yeah
you could manipulate it, so you had 11 down to 18, all with 41 points. And I thought, you know, that means Newcastle were going to get relegated on goal difference, according to me. But
I think we were in the top half when I did it. I think I was being a bit optimistic.
I think, yeah, we talked Reading and QPR and they've been poor. And unfortunately, Wigan went down, I think, simply because they had the FA Cup on their mind. They had other commitments where they looked poor against Swansea, wasn't it? And then against Arsenal, they just looked fatigued. They were more looking forward to the FA Cup, which they did win, and credit to them. But I think if that wasn't there, I think it would have been a lot closer.
Well, not moving on from the Premiership yet, but I'll go round the room and ask, were there any particular highlights of this season's Premiership, regardless of whether you followed it or not? You know, the matches that you saw, the commentary that you heard, what was your individual highlight of this season of the Premiership? If we start, we'll start with Simon.
You put me on the spot because I'm just things going through my head trying to pick which one, and I'm going to go for a goal. And I'm going to go for Luis Suarez's goal against Newcastle from the outrageous touch to take it round the goalkeeper.
That was a beautiful touch. I mean, even Barney, as a Newcastle fan, do you have a riposte to that?
From a Newcastle perspective, no. It's one of the worst seasons we've had in a lot since we got relegated, I'd say. But the moment that stands out for me just from looking at Premier League is Matthew Lowton's goal against Stoke.
Oh, it beautiful.
It was an outrageous goal, and I think it was that victory that pushed Villa out of, gave them momentum to get out of the relegation zone.
Well, it was that and having Christian Benteke, because he's 22, he's in the Belgian starting lineup.
He won't be playing for Aston Villa next season.
I seriously doubt it. My housemate, Phil, he's a Villa fan, and he's hoping, you know, with all fingers and toes crossed, that Villa are going to retain Benteke, but it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, no, he'll be on his way to a top four side. I'm not sure which one yet. Well, I think Arsenal would be silly to sign him.
There's reports that Dortmund are in for him if Lewandowski leaves.
Ooh, that's we'll discuss that when we get onto the Bundesliga.
Aston Villa to the, hopefully, because I despise Bayern Munich, Champions League winners. For me, the standout moment and game of the season was the second game between Arsenal and Spurs in March, partly because I intended to put a bet on Bale to score first and Spurs to win 3-2, which was something like 250-1. My flatmate came back, offered me the chance to cook a massive English breakfast, which we ate, and I couldn't get to the bookmakers. And I remember being sat in the Rose and Crown watching a fantastic game,
crying your eyes out,
that
basically
Arsenal did not get another goal, which thankfully they did not. But that whole
tenterhook
moment.
You
know, no, I can't, mate. Tenterhook moment.
That's why I've got my phone. Whichever betting
I'm Northern, that's witchcraft.
I'm not going to tell you which one I use on my phone, but I definitely place bets on a regular occurrence when they appear at half time.
It's a form of witchcraft. But that game of being on tenterhooks of Arsenal coming back to try and win was
so fantastic. Is that your moment of the season, though?
That
genuinely your moment,
of, moment
the
of the season.
Saving you, what, the £5 that you would have spent on the bookmakers?
No,
and
the game, the game itself, the English breakfast,
the game,
the
good
agony of watching it in the pub, that whole moment was the moment of the season for me, with a fantastic game, fantastic beer, fantastic English breakfast.
Easily
it was just
pleased,
fantastic.
Aren't you, Chris, here?
I mean, I think, Barney, you're definitely right, because there was, this season, there were no moments like this.
Manchester City is still alive here. Balotelli,
it's so good. It's so good.
We will never forget that moment.
Mate,
where you were when you saw that goal go in. Yeah. And I'm not even a City fan, but I was literally jumping around the room celebrating.
Yeah. Me too. I watched it in Lenton and Wortley Hall's JCR, and there were lots of Man United fans there who were saying, "Oh yes, we've won the title," in their strong Southern accents, I might add. You know, we've won the title.
Actually,
and then, you know, I've never seen a room empty that fast.
I have to say, I don't know if any of you guys read some quotes from last night. It was the League Managers Association Awards, and Alex Ferguson won Manager of the Season. And in one of his speeches, he said, "Last season, we won the league for 10 whole seconds. They had the league for 10 seconds, and they lost it." And that's what made him angry. And he said that inspired him to go on to win it this season.
Oh, fair enough. You know, as much as you can dislike Man United as a club, you can't dislike the legacy that Ferguson has left behind. Yes,
I'm doing a good job, mate. Trust me.
We won't see a manager ever like it again.
I don't think so. You know, obviously he's got his flaws, but as his tactical nous, his man management is unparalleled in the modern era. Anyway. Anyone care to disagree? No, we
covered that one a couple of sports shows back.
I think so, yeah. Let's not revisit old topics. Well, then we'll go for a song now. It's going to be one of my favourites. It's a bit old school. It's 10cc's Dreadlock Holiday. And then when we return, we're going to discuss the Spanish League.
Hi, I'm Clyde Tilsey, yeah? That famous night in Barcelona, all that stuff. Yeah, yeah, that was me. You are listening to the URN Sports Show.
There we go. That was Clive being slightly stuck up, as per usual. We went to see him the other month. It was an interesting talk, but it's been covered on the sports show. So let's move on to the topics that we decided
wait,
to
wait,
cover.
Wait. I've got a little bit of breaking
go on,
news.
Go on. Breaking
it's
news.
Not football related. It's just putting it out there. Sky Sports have just announced that Audley Harrison has reversed his decision to retire from professional boxing.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, moving on.
I'm not sure.
I just think we needed to get
that
out there because that is outrageous.
If you want to see Audley Harrison get beaten up in the near future,
put him into a coma, possibly,
then stay tuned. Right, so moving on to the next case for the most exciting European league this season, we have Chris Seabreezy Brown with the Spanish League. Please take the mic.
Well, even though the actual league title has been sewn up for quite some time now, with Barcelona 13 points ahead of second place Real Madrid, that's been a feature of most of the European leagues, whether it's been the Premier League with Man United, Juventus in Italy, Celtic in Scotland. You know,
I don't think Scotland counts as a proper league. Though,
no,
just put
it there have been many European leagues where the league title has been decided quite a while ago. So my argument is that Spain has been no different from them. However, there's been many off-field things that have been very exciting about Spain, such as Tito Villanova and how he's going to recover and shape Barcelona in the future.
Just to cut in, rather rude here, but talking about Tito Villanova and, you know, following his health, I wouldn't really classify that as like...
But the whole uncertainty around Barcelona has been exciting. Yep. For a while, they've had Guardiola, who's just run the show. There's been the Mourinho sagas falling out at Real Madrid. There's been the continued rise of Atletico Madrid, which has been more competitive in Spain. You've had Atletico, you've had Real Sociedad, you've had Malaga. And these teams have been new in that sense to those areas of La Liga. You know, it's normally just been the big two that everyone's recognised, and Bilbao being up there as well. You had Atletico's rise with Falcao, who's been amazing and is possibly on his way to the Premier League. You've had a very exciting Spanish Cup with an El Clasico semi-final, and then just last weekend, Atletico beating Real Madrid.
Yeah, no, I was going to say. I actually watched the Copa del Rey final, and for how much as I enjoyed it as watching Spanish football, it's incredible. The like Ronaldo scoring, the action where you see Cristiano Mourinho sent off, Ronaldo getting sent off as well, and then this outrageous extra time minute goal. But something which really, really got on my nerves was the outrageous amount of diving, and in particular the Real Madrid. Di Maria is now my pet hate player. I hate him because
more than Busquets.
Oh, I don't know. He did 10 rolls. And he wasn't even tackled. It was like 10 rolls. I was like, mate. And then he kind of clutching his face. Then he realised that the ball had gone out and they were playing on. He was like straight back up on his feet. It's like, this is not football I want to watch. Like, we ridiculed Bale, we've ridiculed Suarez before, and plenty of other players in the Premier League who've gone down easily but not even rolled, right? And we're talking about players, and I'm not picking on Madrid, certainly. It's just when I have watched Madrid play, I've seen that happen. I'm sure it happens across the league. And it's not the sort of culture that I enjoy at football, watching players dive around looking for penalties or free kicks.
It's the imaginary cards that really gets me.
I do that all the time. I do that when I'm watching football.
You're not a player.
But as a qualified referee, you know, there's nothing more aggravating than watching the telly and you see these, you know, 25-year-old children, because that's what it is, saying, "Oh, ref, no, he fouled me. I want a yellow card for him. That's a yellow card." It's like, no. Let the referee do his job. Don't put him under undue pressure, okay? And you'll get a better game for it. And it is just, it's poisonous. It's a detriment to, you know, how games are officiated.
I also think that in terms of that, as managers as well, who come out and afterwards and talk about the referee instead of talking about how badly their players perform. We've seen that Mourinho is a star player, a manager who comes out and blames the referee for a defeat after a game and not going, "Well, actually, my players didn't turn up today."
No, I disagree with that. Mourinho is very good at saying his players have underperformed. He said when Barcelona went far ahead at the beginning of the season, he said, "My players just aren't up to scratch at the moment."
That's after he's fallen out, though, with all of his players. Well, but I'm sure that's something you might come
He's only really fallen out with Casillas, Pepe and Sergio Ramos.
that's probably the
mainstay of his defence, I grant you. But
also probably the three biggest players behind Ronaldo, apart from Ronaldo, at his club. Pepe, Sergio Ramos, and Iker Casillas. You're talking about the captain, the vice-captain.
Yeah.
And probably your best one of your other best defenders. Funny to say that, actually. When he got sent off on the weekend, Pepe snapped down onto the bench at half-time once he disappeared to sit down and celebrate with the players. Something I noticed.
But Chris, please continue.
Well, we've also got some of the uncertainty regarding the way that Spanish football has been financed in terms of Real Sociedad could potentially qualify for the Champions League, or they could be playing in La Liga Adelante, which is basically because they're being investigated for not just drugs when they were doing really well in the early 90s, but the club's also being investigated for many financial irregularities, which means that the El País headline was Marenier está
in English.
Limbo.
We know we can speak Spanish. Yeah.
Marenier is in limbo. And it's sort of like, does the manager want to take a job that's been offered to him at Rennes? Or does he want to, in France, or does he want to stay with Real Sociedad? So you've got that sort of, you could be in the Champions League or you could be completely relegated.
There's a lot of clubs at financial trouble in Spain, not just there's also Malaga struggling, Valencia have been struggling for a few seasons as well, to name a few. And is that just how the clubs are being run out there at the moment? Madrid, obviously,
I think so,
Madrid only run sufficiently well is because they have sponsors and they've got people buying their shirts. They spend outrageous amounts of money year on year out, and if they didn't have that, they'd be struggling as well, like Malaga.
Yeah, but there's also been, apart from the finance, a lot of fantastic football. You've had Barcelona, who've sauntered to the league when they played in La Liga, not really done it in Europe. You've had the different style of Mourinho, which I have to say I quite like. And if I were a manager, I would actively tell my players, you will surround the referee, you will influence him in that manner. And you've got other teams that try to play like Barcelona, in the same way that like Swansea and Arsenal do, but there's just more of them. Like Athletic Bilbao, fantastic technical team. Malaga have been playing really well. There's been a lot of attractive football, if that's what you like. And also, for those who prefer other styles, there's quite a variety within Spain that you don't necessarily see across the rest of the world. And another point to remember about the Spanish league being more exciting and generally better than other leagues like the Premier League, England didn't have a representative in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Spain had three.
Okay, well, definitive there. So, comments from our panel, Barney.
But then what happened to Madrid and Barcelona in the semis? Madrid,
they were taken apart basically by the Germans.
Madrid were very lucky to get past Man U, and they had Galatasaray in the quarters, which was quite a bit of a walkover for them. And then when they
Galatasaray still made it really difficult.
They did in
for
the second half of the second leg. I'd like to promote
Galatasaray beating my team Schalke in the previous round. I think they did a really good job.
Mm. So you see,
not Galatasaray's biggest fan. Got to be sad.
No, but that stems from other reasons. For
probably stay
fans.
Away from that topic. But Madrid, so you see, Madrid struggled against Galatasaray and Man U, and then were taken apart by Dortmund, but they managed to get, they nearly got there in the end, but in the first leg they were completely obliterated. Barcelona only just got through against Milan and PSG. I thought PSG were very unlucky against Barcelona, and then, well, we all know what happened when they got to Munich, so I wouldn't really say Spanish football, the Champions League was a great advertisement of Spanish football this season.
Well, Barcelona just collapsed against Munich, which is as much of a credit to Bayern Munich as it is a criticism of Barcelona.
Go deeper. Why did Barcelona collapse? They've been dominant. They've been at the, you know, the front of European football for about 7-8 years. Why have they collapsed now?
I think I've got an argument for this, and it's the fact that Lionel Messi couldn't play. They don't have a plan B, I don't think, Barcelona. I think they've got Messi. They like playing him up front. He's sort of this, not centre forward, but he likes to drift around. And they don't have anything else. If he's not playing, he doesn't finish the goals for them. They've got all this nice fancy movement, but they don't have a centre forward. Like, they play David Villa out on the left. He doesn't play out there normally. You've got Iniesta, Xavi, Pedro. Got these fantastic players, but they just simply can't put the ball in the back of the net unless they have Messi there. That's why Messi scores goals week in, week out. He's got hat-tricks upon hat-tricks. He's got 10 hat-tricks in La Liga this season, which is an incredible feat. But that's because Barcelona dominate the play and he puts the ball in the back of the net. And if they don't have him, they really do struggle. They play Fabregas as their centre forward, essentially, in a false, like, well, front six or something.
Yeah, front six with a false nine. And
yeah, that's why Barcelona sort of fallen away. I have enjoyed La Liga when I've watched it this season, but it hasn't been exciting as previous seasons for me. I think Barcelona ran away with the league quite early on through the fault of Real Madrid not performing. There's been other small sides have performed well, but it's not been the attractive football that I enjoyed. That obviously the Premier League as well, the same. And I think maybe when we get onto another league, I think I may mention why I like it the most. But
I agree with you about Barcelona, but I'd say that that's half the reason. I completely, completely agree with you about the fact that without Messi, they haven't got a plan B. As much as it pains me to say, no team does apart from Man United. No team has a plan B, and every team needs one.
Well, if everyone's, I hate the topic when someone says, "Well, if you don't have him, but you don't have him,
but
then
if you don't,
you've got someone
then
else to replace." So
yeah, they haven't got someone who can.
Yeah,
they haven't actually got a centre forward or a designated striker. As in, it's not even, well, he's the best player in the world, how do you replace that? It's simply you don't have someone in that position who's not as good as him to do that job.
Yeah.
But the other one that I'd say is that the lack of Guardiola has really been a thing for them.
I think
in
I was hoping you said that.
I think they've missed a sense of direction, yeah.
Yeah, in that while they always play this tiki-taka, pass it round, you know, 20 passes and then you can have a shot, they altered it quite a lot. They would alter which position a player found himself in, exactly how the team practically lined up, and the fluidity and tactical movement wasn't there. Like, occasionally they'd flood the midfield and play three at the back. They've not really had Guardiola's tactical tinkering, really, that they did in other times, and they lost their leader.
Well, what I think also is a marked difference between Villanova and Guardiola in terms of their tactics imposed on Barcelona is the pressure when they don't have the ball. Under Guardiola, you know, you had the famous, was it 6-second rule? Where you had to
to have the ball back within 6 seconds, yeah. Which was his.
And so you saw a Barcelona that as soon as they lost possession, they press, you know, they'd hound all over the pitch, okay, really high, even up to, you know, the penalty area of the opposing team. But under Villanova, they've got lazier. They don't press as much. And I think they've really suffered for it as
that
teams are able to dwell on the ball.
As much as anything else,
one
age
season?
And fitness.
I think, actually, but, no, you talk about age, but I think they have missed some defenders this season. They haven't had PK throughout the season. He's been in
Puyol.
And out. Puyol's been out almost the entirety of the season. They don't have centre-backs replacements. They've got two big centre-backs who they rely on. And they don't have them anymore.
They're desperate to buy one in the summer. I mean, there's reports of them going for Kompany. That's quite ambitious of them.
I think that quite a few clubs are looking for big central defenders as well.
The point of the Barcelona pressuring system is that every one of the 10 outfield players pressured rather than, you know, just a back four.
I can see that argument. I think, but you're two centre-backs, so you're last man in defence, your last man in defence before the goalkeeper. And even if you're not talking about pressing, we're talking about two defenders who are going to win you headers from corners, free kicks. Puyol has been one of the Barcelona's best players for years. It's because he leads the side. He knows how to control the defence. That's his job, his duty. It's like Jamie Carragher at Liverpool. How are we going to replace him like
but
that?
But I see it, Milan.
It's the same. Yeah, it's the same thing. That's how it works. And unfortunately, they've lacked that this season. They don't have another centre-back to replace them. So there was two sort of sides to Barcelona. Obviously, they miss Messi when they don't have him. And they've missed their defenders as well, and Piqué and Puyol.
And they haven't defended as a team. Even when they've been on the back foot and they're not doing the pressing thing that Louis mentioned already, you see it in several games that Dani Alves is, in my opinion, a defensive weak link. As in, he pushes far, far too far forward and no one covers for him. If you watch Ramirez's goal for Chelsea against Barcelona last season, the whole problem in that goal comes from Dani Alves not being where he ought to be. And the reason is that he's at the corner flag towards Chelsea's goal on the far right-hand side, instead of being anywhere near a defensive position that he ought to have taken up, which allows Ramirez to just run through, chip the keeper.
Made for a very exciting game, though. So, so we'll bring the Spanish league to a close there. Simon, do you think it's more exciting than the English league this season, or less exciting?
Liga. I don't know. I've enjoyed watching the three best players at the moment in terms of Van Persie, Luis Suarez and Gareth Bale. So I'm going to say I'm still going to stick with the Premier League, I think.
So an early victory from the Premier League, but we've still got two leagues to cover. Next, we have this clip.
Let me introduce
the clip. Simon, introduce your section.
So
please.
I wasn't meant to be on the show. I was covering for David Coasen, who can't be here, dissertation woes and everything. And I was like, got to choose a league. Which one have I enjoyed the most? And one just popped into my head straight away. And it's the Portuguese La Liga. Final game of the season. Porto sitting in second. Benfica sitting in second. Porto sitting in first. Same number of points. 93rd minute. Here we go.
Carai, há um desvio do Matites, a bola já para Varela, zona central, abre a bola para Kelvin, entra no meio campo contrário, passa para o Axe e dá a bola já para o Aliança, no levezinho, vai com o Luizão, dá a bola para a área, para Kelvin, atirou, gol!
So really, in case you missed that, Porto scored in the 93rd minute to win the league. Incredible. And then Benfica went on to lose in the 93rd minute to Chelsea in the Europa League the Wednesday after. That's something that stands out for me. I love remembering games. Like last season, we were talking about this earlier. I love remembering games from certain league seasons, because you're not going to recall a league season 20 years' time. I'm going to be going, oh, I remember that. But
I remember when Stoke played Sunderland. Yeah, oh gosh, it was such an average game.
Yeah, but I will always remember Aguero's goal from last season. I will always remember that, because it's been a season.
There we go.
I never get tired of hearing that.
No, and also actually, it's been a sort of two-horse race, this sort of league. We've talked about the other leagues where we've seen United run away with it. We've seen Barcelona run away with it. Porto and Benfica have been fighting first and second throughout the entire season, so there's always been a competition edge.
Undefeated until last weekend, both teams.
Porto haven't lost a game in 3 years. Not lost a league match
at
in
home
three
or in
years.
League match?
A league Fair. Match, home or away, in 3 years. I think the other defeat was against
Benfica.
That's a
Benfica. Top stat, which I didn't
that
know.
That is a top stat. But then, bring it out for but into then, Fortnite.
But then does that show like the lack of quality in the league?
There probably is a lack of quality, but... It's enjoyable in the sense that we will remember it and you see that sort of game. But yeah, I have to agree. The lack of quality is there. But they've still got some top players like Oster Cardoza. Like, he could play for any team, I think, in my opinion. He's a top quality centre forward.
But also across the other teams in Portugal. I mean, it's a bit of a feeder league. It has that reputation. But when you're playing, when you've got, Falcao played for Porto, Hulk is still...
He's gone now. He's gone to that Russian team.
Zenit.
Well, it's important because depending on how you pronounce it, depends on the meaning. One's Zenith, the other's very rude.
Okay. There we go. Well, so we go expert in Russian.
Is that Russian as well?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So Zenit Leningrad, as we shall refer to them from now on. So Hulk, we had... who else? We have Cristiano Ronaldo
came from Sporting Lisbon.
Di Maria. David Luiz.
Ramirez as well, both from Benfica.
Another
two.
Way of looking at it is in the group games in this Champions League against Man United, Braga were 1-0 up and then lost 3-1, which I had a correct score bet on, getting Chris. And I think they went 2-0 up against Man United as well. So, you know, these teams do have a certain level of quality within that league in order to beat some of the other world's big hitters.
Okay, yeah, no, so it's a yeah. good
And also another point actually about this league is actually something I didn't know, so I'm not sure how it worked out, but the bottom five teams in the league, there were only 3 points separated them going into the final game. So, again, we're talking about the Premier
Thank
League.
Thank God for Wikipedia.
There's a bit of a delay on that one, unfortunately, but
yeah. Yeah, well, that's totally true. I did look it up on Wikipedia. But that's another point. Relegation battles, everyone likes a good relegation battle. And if it's going to go down to the final game of the season, we haven't seen that in the Premier League for a bit.
True.
I'm not sure what La Liga's status is. I think a couple of teams are already down.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, okay. So, Chris, Barney, have you been watching the Portuguese league this season?
I have to admit, I haven't really watched Portuguese league, but I've seen a bit of Benfica. Obviously, they knocked us out of Europa League and we had a good start against them with Cissé going ahead.
Us being Newcastle.
Yeah, sorry. And but then Benfica really did show their quality and they were a very good side. I really like Gaetan. I think he's got really good potential. I can see him going to a top European club in the near future. So I would agree there is a lot of quality in Portuguese league, but I can't say I've really watched a lot of it.
More exciting than the Spanish or the English leagues?
I would say no, because that Porto-Benfica match does sound incredible, but you have to look at the whole league in general, and it's just the fact two teams got undefeated is interesting, but it kind of shows the lack of competitiveness in the league for me.
Fair enough. Chris?
I think it's interesting, but yeah, it's very exciting to watch, very exciting to get into, but I don't think it's the most exciting or best league because, you know, Benfica, for the last 50 years since they lost to Matt Busby's Man United in the European Cup in 1968, I believe.
Good knowledge.
It was 10 years after Munich because he'd rebuilt the team, and that was the point that, like, within 10 years they got back to where they were before. But since that time of coming runners-up, they've been in a European final 10 times. Not won any.
Interesting.
The thing with the Portuguese league is it always seems to sum that up. You know, it's good, it's close, but there's no cigar.
Before that, I'm not sure it was before or after that final, the coach of Benfica, he'd won a few league titles. He was an incredible Hungarian coach, and he was like, I would like a wage, he wanted more wages. And they bored were like, no. And he's like, okay, I'm going to leave. You're never going to win a European competition after I leave. And they've been in 10 finals and haven't.
Oh, the footballing equivalent of a gypsy's curse. I think with that, we better go to a song. This is another cracking tune from, I think, what was a really good first album by Damian Marley. It's the title track, the titular track even. It's Welcome to Jamrock.
Yo, what's happening, people? My name's James Chunky the Gal, and you're listening to URN Sports Show.
Thank you, Chunky.
Didn't realise that was his nickname.
Yeah. Probably Kit Kat was his nickname.
Oh, God. There's not a clip on the soundboard available to me. I'll find one, and I'll play it in about 10 minutes. So, that was... that was Welcome to Jamrock by Damian Marley. We had a text in relating to that from our very own head of sport, Michael Gaffers Gaffney. Could Manchester City's problems this season have been a difficult second album? Answers on a postcard, please. If, like Gaffers, you want to contact the show, feel free to send us a web text at urn1350.net or you can tweet us at urn1350. So, moving on to my section, which is the Bundesliga, said in a German accent. So this year we saw the 50th incarnation of the Bundesliga, and unlike the Premiership or Ligue 1, the Bundesliga went into the final game of the season unsure of the two of the three teams to be relegated.
Greuther Fürth were down already, weren't
they? Greuther Fürth were down, yeah. But the thing about the German League is it has an extra excitement-enhancing relegation playoff against the third-place team from the second Bundesliga, which in this case were Kaiserslautern. Furthermore, there was a battle for the top at the top for European places, with five teams battling for entry into the Champions League, the Champions League spot, and the two subsequent Europa League spots. So, and even if you're a Bayern fan, winning the 50th incarnation of the Bundesliga in record time with six games to go, you know, this season was a must watch rather. And I'm going to whip out some stats to back this up. But first, I'm going to play this clip.
Bayern Munich fans will be dancing into the night after their team swept all before them in clinching their 23rd Bundesliga title. Jupp Heynckes's men defeated Eintracht Frankfurt 1-0 to wrap up the league with six games to spare, the quickest ever triumph in German history.
There we go, just summarising what I'd said there. The Bundesliga was the most exciting season to watch this year, simply due to the sheer amount of goals. Okay, we have 898 goals scored in the league across 306 games, which is, you know, the highest average, 2.93 goals per game, the highest average in Europe this season. So superior to the Premiership, 2.79 goals, League One, Liga, 2.6 goals, La Liga, 2.8 goals, and, you know, we had nine-goal thrillers. Schalke 5, Hannover 4, 8 second-half goals in that match. Huge results like Bayern's 9-2 drubbing of Hamburg, and this is a Hamburg with Raphael van der Vaart in it. It's not a shabby team at all.
I saw that game, and one thing that it really emphasised for me, because it was bang in the middle between Arsenal's two Champions League games, is that Bayern cannot defend corners. Not at all to save their life.
I think one Didier Drogba might agree with you there after Chelsea's only corner in that final resulting in a goal. Great match. Thought I'd just mention that on air. And also, you know, in the Bundesliga, we have like mid-place teams producing ridiculous results. So Freiburg, who ended up finishing fifth in the end, a good season for them. Won 5-3 against Hoffenheim.
Who were near the relegation places, weren't they, Hoffenheim?
They were in the end, yeah. So, you know, let's not even mention the German representatives in a Champions League. I mean, they by far and large bossed it and deserve, quite rightly so, to be in the Champions League. That is Bayern Munich and the arch-rival team of my beloved Schalke, Borussia Dortmund. So, gents, what have you got to say for yourself? The German league is the most exciting.
Well, it's a difficult one not to argue, because I have watched a few games. You talk about goals. Everyone loves goals. And to sum it up, like, Frank Ribery's goal at the weekend was sensational.
Pure class,
like,
wasn't it? That was
timing or what?
That was really good timing. The cartwheel decides to play of its own accord, but please continue speaking.
Why
with
not?
Ski Sunday in the background.
I don't know. Well, I was talking about goals. We've seen Robert Lewandowski for Borussia Dortmund. We've seen, I've forgotten the centre forward for Bayern Munich, not going
Mandzukic.
Yeah. Both quality and class. Style of play that Borussia Dortmund play is sensational. They're very good, fast, counter-attacking side. I've enjoyed them. I really hope they beat Bayern Munich in the final in the Champions League. I just love watching the way they play. It's a shame though, because I think it's unfair that Bayern Munich don't have a Champions League trophy in their cabinet as of yet. The last couple of seasons, they've probably deserved to win it. Especially last season. I'm sorry, Louis, but Chelsea really, really did fluke that Champions League.
I would admit that with you know, well, quite freely.
Yeah. So
I would question that.
What do you mean?
Fluking it.
What? It was a fluke.
Sorry.
We're saying it was a fluke.
No, the idea... Not that. That wasn't what I was questioning. The idea that Munich should have a Champions League trophy of their own.
Okay, go on. Please, argue your case.
My case is that for a couple of years, they've not been good enough. This year, perhaps they are good enough to win it. You know, they couldn't beat Chelsea fully. They lost to Inter Milan, Jose Mourinho's Inter Milan. And I genuinely despise the team through from Beckenbauer, Rummenigge, midfielder whose name I can't remember, who are all on the board, who are all ambassadors,
Billy
who
Harris,
are all coaching. Yeah, that's Hernes, him.
Yeah.
Hernes.
They're all criminals.
Who all managed to bribe a referee in 1975 to prevent Leeds United from winning the European Cup.
So there is a reason always for this. Always a Leeds grudge.
To be very, very honest, as the referee was banned for bribery within 3 months of the final, they didn't win that. They can throw their medals in the bin because they've not won any of them without cheating.
Okay. controversial words there.
I think the argument you base it on is history rather than
I'd just like to put a disclaimer out. Chris Brown's views do not represent those of the URN or the University of Nottingham. And we may continue. Simon Shah.
Well, I don't want to go on history. I think they have played sensational football this season. It's going to be a sensational final, whether or not. I think there'll be goals, plenty of goals. We're not just talking about the two big teams, though. We've seen lower leagues like Bayer Leverkusen, managed by Sammy Hupia.
Cracking.
Let's face it, right? Let's face it, this guy hadn't managed anyone until last season. Someone heartily suggested, do you want to take over for the rest of the season when they sat their manager? He said, yeah, why not? I'll give it a go. End of the season, they went, you can do it for a season. And looks where he's taken them. He's taken them into Champions League football, I think,
yeah.
In his first season in charge as manager. Incredible for them. Schalke as well, they've been pretty good. They're your side.
No,
they've been all right. Well, you sold Holtby.
Yeah, I know, we sacked our manager because we were third in the beginning of the season and then had an absolute crash, sort of similar to what Chelsea do every season over Christmas.
Sack a manager and then
sack a manager. That's not what I meant. I meant like lose 7 games on the trot and
after sacking a manager.
They sacked him because
he lost
so many games and you know, we were down to 10th at one point and then got in the under 17 manager who has you know, scraped 4th place back for us where you know, that's the minimum of what Schalke expect in a season. I mean, all credit to Bayer Leverkusen. Schürrle and Kiesling have just performed amazingly this season, especially Kiesling, underrated, as Akosin would love me to say on air. He's very underrated. This season has been one of his, well, has been his best seasons that he's ever played. He's a late bloomer, a bit like Hulk. There was a groan from someone.
I heard a groan. I don't know where that
I'm
came
not
from.
Sure, he's that good.
I said he's the top scorer this season in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, but he is their main focus of attack. Whereas, like, if you look at Munich, they've got loads of players that can score that are better than him.
That's true. Another stat coming out,
though.
Yeah,
it's like the Benteke idea.
Yeah?
You know, great striker, but has he scored all those goals because he's the only outlet Villa have? Or has he scored all those goals because he's better than, because he's done it like a one-man team, like Bale or Van Persie?
It's a very good point to raise, but Schürrle and Kiesling, both who play up front, Schürrle plays on the wing, sort of a wing forward for Bayer Leverkusen, have both got the highest number of shots on target
Schürrle's
this
very
season.
Good.
Yeah, and hopefully he's going to come to Chelsea. I don't know, get rid of Marin. That was a weird buy. £7 million for a winger that doesn't even play. Sort of typifies Chelsea's transfer policy there. We've had our arguments, our debates, what is the most exciting league. If you can't vote for your own one, Barney, let's start with you. Bundesliga. It's the right choice. Chris?
Bundesliga, if only because I've been following the highlights on ITV4 with my brother, and that woman really cracks me up.
She's awful.
She has the most... She's really pretty to look at. You know, but she has this really robotic voice, where it's sort of like, now, let's see if Borussia Mönchengladbach can beat Bayern
Munich.
Wait,
is this the older lady? Because I'm not sure if I agree if she's that attractive. No
she's
offense
right.
to her. Okay.
Isabella something Reinhardt.
But, okay, yeah. Moving on swiftly.
Moving on from ITV4's poor coverage of Bundesliga highlights, because it's really bad package. But go on, Simon.
For me, Bundesliga, simply because of the goals. Everyone loves goals, and they've put them in. Hopefully next season they will see a better performance in some of the other leagues stepping up. Obviously, we've got the transfer window coming up, which I think is going to be the most exciting transfer window in quite a while. Lots of managers trading places. Lots of owners going to be backing their managers with lots of money. Players moving. So I think next season we're going to be looking forward to some great games.
Fair enough. So I think it's a unanimous decision there from for the Bundesliga. Last point of the day, lads. If your team, what's the best signing in the summer window that your team could make, possibly? As in, not obviously say, oh, sign Messi, but a realistic transfer target that would really strengthen your team. We'll go with you, Barney, first.
Well, a decent centre-back or Andy Carroll.
You can have Andy Carroll from Liverpool.
But there you go. Just because he suits our play very well. The stat for Newcastle is that haven't scored one corner all season.
Wow, that's a stat. All these stats are coming out. You have to save them for a fortnight's time.
Yeah, I've got one already saved for one for Paul.
His show, his regular show, where he plays stat poker. Chris?
Leeds need a fitness coach.
Because
there have been too many games where from the 80th minute onwards, we've conceded goals. So we need that, and I would like us to get Adam Lafondre from Reading, because our strikers have not... Well, we had Becchio, sold him to Norwich in the January transfer window, and he remains our top scorer by about seven.
Good shout. Simon?
For me, it has to be a centre-back, someone to replace Jamie Carragher. That's actually someone I mentioned to you just before the show started. Schalke's centre-back, Papadopoulos?
Kyriakos Papadopoulos.
That's a bit optimistic for Liverpool.
Yeah, he's a unit. He's 21 years old. He's a signing. It's going to be optimistic, but... if we got him, I'd be very, very, very happy.
Okay, well, there we go. It's 55 seconds before 7 o'clock, and this is where we're going to have to end. I leave you with an apt song. It's We Are the Champions by the wonderful band Queen.